This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we sit down with Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, to take a hard look at the Wisconsin State Legislature and the open seat for Wisconsin Governor at a time when Democrats and Republicans are deeply divided. Dr. Craig unpacks the pressing issues facing our nation and explores how these deep-rooted tensions are reshaping the very future of government. Is America moving forward, or are we dismantling the very progress generations fought for? Dr. Craig brings his insight, his expertise, and his Milwaukee roots to a powerful conversation you won't want to miss. Come with us as we explore the hard questions about our direction and what it truly means to create a nation where equity and justice are lived realities, not just ideals. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you find your podcast. Please like and subscribe so don't miss the conversation. All right. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I am thrilled and excited about my next guest, a guy that I have gotten to know and now have actually been interacting with. I don't know. It's got to be going on 15, 17 years. I don't know. I lose track of how much time, but there's not another guest that I've had on or have on that I respect his views more so than my guest right now, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Good morning to you, Dr. Craig. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Earl. We go back a ways, and it's always a pleasure to be with you. I've involved a lot of different stations you've been on at national events like Radio Rose, all of that. So, yeah, so it's always a pleasure to talk to you and have a higher level conversation.
You know, Dr. Craig, I really wanted to begin by just looking at in totality with where we are right now in this nation and the divide and all those things that are taking place and all the shiny objects that are all around us that right now the media and people are transfixed on. But I'm looking at the average everyday American citizen, especially in my community, and the cost of things, Dr. Craig. And I'm just wondering, I know we're headed towards recession. I don't care what anybody says. I've lived long enough to have seen the signs. And yet, Dr. Craig, people are struggling now, but the near future signals an even more difficult time. Where are we at, Dr. Craig?
Oh, we're in difficult times, all right. And I think I would describe it this way. There's been a lot of focus, both in the United States, other democracies that are at risk, about the threat to democracy. And the threat is usually described as having to do with, you know, separation of powers in the government, whether or not the elections are fair and everyone has access to them, right? All of those sorts of things. People not leaving power when they lose an election, like 2020, or trying not to. But the deeper threat to democracy, though that's kind of the surface mechanism of democracy, is that democracy has been a functioning system or Republican form of government, small r Republicans, for over 250 years. Because it actually delivered for people overall. And it was a workable system that made it possible for people to increasingly, every generation do better than the last, and everyone to have hope, and everyone get ahead to some degree, have some way of getting ahead, some fair shot at the American dream, right? And that changed dramatically, really beginning in the late 1970s, early 1980s. What happened was we'd had a period after World War II of incredible even distribution of the wealth of this country. We're a very, very wealthy country. And we built the biggest middle class in world history on the backs of, you know, having strong unions that gave people benefits, healthcare benefits, pension benefits, and good wages, and a way forward, and a way to send their kids to do even more if they wanted to become doctors and other things, right? If they themselves were industrial workers. And really the elite of this country, the corporate elite, decided they want to keep more of the money, and they rigged the system against average people. And the term used for this is neoliberalism usually, but it means it was returned kind of the 19th century, social Darwinist view that you either got ahead and got a piece or you lost. It was a competition, right, where there were winners and losers. And therefore, the corporate elite and the wealthy saw themselves as winners. And therefore, things have gotten gradually worse, kind of like a frog in a pot.
Hot water, yes.
Right, where it doesn't know it's being boiled to death until it's too late. And that's built year after year. And part of it is that wages have really, if you look at them, they've flatlined or gone down for a lot of people in real terms since the late 1970s. But then costs have gone way up because each sector has been colonized essentially by big corporate actors, or people who act like corporate actors, like big hospital chains, that are essentially extracting as much money as possible. And that's been the whole purpose of everything. And it's just gotten more and more unsustainable for people. This was a global phenomenon, though. After it was a global phenomenon that the whole advanced industrial world has had the same struggle as the United States. But then COVID really affected people's psyche. So in every country after COVID-19, the party that happened to be in power lost power decisively. In fact, the Democrats were much closer than any other of the major industrial democracies in that election. So in many ways, people were just fed up, and the COVID pandemic was like, I don't know, just that was finally like, we've had enough. But it really was about whether democracy is delivering for us. And Donald Trump was astute in trying to run on the price of things. The problem is he really offered no real solutions. It was just, you're upset with the way things are now. I'm going to attack the system. I'm going to make it better. But his focus has been something quite different. And in fact, much of what he is doing economically is going to make things much worse and much more perilous. And so the question is going to be this, and we could get into what he is doing that is doing that. And by the way, I think destabilizing democracy itself, the way that the consolidation of authoritarianism with him also undermines the economy, because if you don't have certainty as an investor, you don't think if I'm going to invest this money, it's going to be a stable situation where we can have return on investment for years, you're not going to make investment. So it actually, instability around the world actually is economically extremely damaging. But what does the public do? And by the way, a lot of the public didn't move at all, but enough of it moved in order for Trump to win the election. We have to understand there are a lot that was very stable, but a lot of people are unhappy. So what do you do when you can't afford healthcare even though you have insurance, or you don't know if you can keep insurance, and they're cutting millions of people off of Medicaid, Badger Care in Wisconsin? What do you do on housing, where housing is the housing problem? We get into the complexity of it, but it's a system that just doesn't work for people. It works for speculators, and it works for people who make a lot of money in development on housing, but it's terrible for average people. We can go about this. What do they do when they're disappointed by Trump as well? I don't think, and this gets to general, I don't think that you therefore say, we want to return the way it was before Trump. That was better. I think you have to offer something new and something different. And I think there's a surprising primary victory in New York for mayor of Zoran Mamdani is an example of that. He didn't run on the old Democratic platform. He said, I have these solutions to housing costs, to the price of food, and I'm going to be very bold, and here are the things I'm going to concretely do that no other mayor of New York has done. And that made him win overwhelmingly. Donald Trump's trying to figure out how to work with Andrew Cuomo, a former Democrat, to take him out. But it doesn't look like it's going to work. So we need to look at that playbook. We need to offer them something that will really improve their lives and make it possible for them to feel like there's hope for them, their children, young people who don't think that they really have access to the American dream, have a sense of hopelessness.
So, Dr. Craig, there's a lot to unpack, but I want to go back to, you know, you spoke of my life story when you talked about industry and those things, and that was basically my life as a young man. And I was under the misconception that, you know, at that time in the mid-60s, early 60s, 70s, 80s, when you know, you could walk off the street like I did at 18 years old and walk into a plant and work 34 years as I did and get a pension and make a middle-class life and be able to save some money and buy a home and the American dream and all those things. I guess what I didn't think of, Dr. Craig, at that point in time was that that wasn't real, because America was able to build this middle class, strong middle class for everybody, because the rest of the world's infrastructure had been destroyed coming out of World War II. And we were independent. Everything that we needed, Dr. Craig, in our society, we produced. We didn't count or depend on others all over the world. We did those things ourselves. I don't care if it was sewing machines, washing machines, automobiles. You know, we had all of those different industries that we had. And so we kind of were dealing solely with internally. Even though we only made up 4% of the global population, we were independent of the rest. And so we could build that strong middle class that you were talking about. I guess what I never thought was that that would ever come to an end. I thought that that was America. But it was kind of like an illusion, because we've never been able to get back there.
I think that's very true, Earl. That's insightful. There was a feeling in the 60s, 50s, 60s, the glory days of this economy, that the United States had finally figured things out, and it wasn't going to be like the dog world of the 19th century or the Great Depression. It turned out those post-war decades were the aberration, and we've gone backwards. So that is very true. Here's the thing. I think some of those were unusual conditions, right? Some of those were that the whole industrial production capacity of Europe was destroyed, and therefore the United States had a bigger role in the economy than it would have, especially in the 1950s. And once everything was rebuilt, you were probably going to move to a more globalized economy. And I think we weren't going to produce everything ourselves. But I think the fork in the road was, what you could have done is you could have set it up so the American system was exported to the whole world, where it produced, where we essentially had high road, high wage union jobs for all of the new countries came into production. And then if the United States had the more specialized things it did, it would still all be on that platform, and workers wouldn't be pitted against workers and undercutting each other. They're not making the decision, but that very inexpensive labor in China is being used by rich people in the West and in China to enrich themselves and undermine better paid workers in the West. And so really it was about a business elite making a decision that we want to get more of the goods, and we want to go backwards and getting away with it politically, and finding a way to do so. This is the playbook, by getting people upset about some other enemy. I mean, initially, and so it could be the Cold War and the Russian threat, but it was often like welfare cheats and welfare queens, right? Or immigrants. And that was a bait and switch. You can see it like a magic act on a stage. Unfortunately, the bait and switch works. And so, but then the problem is that creates more and more public frustration. And what it did is it created a much bigger market for an authoritarian kind of right-wing populism that is MAGA right now, because they're perfectly convinced that all of the problems in their lives are caused by
somebody else, you know,
people, yes, by liberals, by trans people, etc. So that's what you're seeing, but they have nothing for average people when it comes to improving their lives. They really have nothing, and that's why the Trump regime will not deliver anything. But the question is, that with the opposition, the pro-democracy forces that are mostly in the Democratic Party, you understand that you have to, people are frustrated with the system. You need to create a fundamental alternative to the system, a progressive populism, if you're gonna have a chance, like legitimately, how we're gonna make housing affordable, how we're gonna make healthcare right, how we're going to actually make the conversion we need to make to renewable energy something that both prevents runaway climate change and makes people's utility bills way cheaper and more affordable by not letting the big for-profit utilities like We Energies in the Milwaukee area and Xcel in the Western Wisconsin and across the state, simply Fortune 500 companies making massive profits on our backs and building more and more plants of dirty fossil fuel plants we don't need. So it goes on and on, Earl. But that's why I think that Zoran Mamdani and what he did in New York is the model, not because of everything he stands for or did, but because he focused in on how he was going to do things no other mayor of New York had ever done, that was going to make food prices affordable, it was going to make housing affordable, and a number of other things. And that he won overwhelmingly. No, he was someone, I mean, Earl, I don't know. This is like Northern Illinois University won the college football national championship. He came out of nowhere, right? No one even thought he was a serious candidate to win the primary, let alone win by a large margin.
But Dr. Craig, I agree totally with your explanation, but here's what we're up against. Democrats inside of the party who don't want to let go and who don't want to agree that it's time to move into this different direction for fear that it leaves them behind. So how are we possibly going to be able to fight that battle, not only outside of the Democratic Party, but within the Democratic Party, where there are people who still say, well, he's a socialist. And so, you know, Democrats as well. And so, well, socialism is, you know, it's like the plague. And so maybe part of Dr. Craig, what I see with him and with others, is it's time for a different vision, right? It's time, you know, it's not my generation anymore. My generation and its way of thinking, Dr. Craig, you know, I'm not saying that we should be totally jettisoned, but clearly newer views, newer ideas for a future that it's not mine, it's what we should be looking at. Am I off base?
I don't think you're off base. It doesn't have to be generational, but it probably is partly generational. But what comes in could also be, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the internet with young men that is highly authoritarian and manosphere, it's called. So it could go, the generational turn could go Zoran Mamdani's way or another much more disturbing way. Okay. And it's about, you know, it's what we make of it. I think that Democratic Party, it has, I've said Stockholm syndrome, for people who know what that is, when the people who are captives would start to associate with their captors, or maybe what happens in trench warfare where the soldiers are so used to being in trenches, and if they put their heads up, they might get them shot off, that right. they're afraid to do anything. That's the way a lot of elected Democrats have acted. But it's and they're afraid to take any risks. They have to get all sorts of polling and advice from political consultants who tell them to be very careful, use these carefully scripted talking points, and there's nothing you can do, or your head will get shot off. But this is happening because this whole thing you've noticed with the building momentum of people protesting the Trump regime and the attack on the basic institutions of liberal democracy, it's led to a big grassroots push on elected Democrats to be bolder and take risks and do things. And Chuck Schumer took a whole lot of heat over keeping the government open.
Right.
You know, the last time. And they seem to have learned their lessons. And Hakeem Jeffries has received the House Minority Leader, the same kind of pressure. Schumer is the Senate Minority Leader. And you saw it with the pressure on Governor Evers, who insisted, speaking of old school, and I know he's not running for re-election, where Governor Evers would not have a real fight over the budget and signed a mostly Republican budget and claimed it was a bipartisan compromise. He was under the same kind of pressure in this budget fight, state budget fight. And I think it's part of why
he didn't run again.
Didn't run for re-election. So you already have the Democrat groups who demanding it. It's possible that Zora Mandami is one example. There'll be other blueprints. But I think that there's a real, like, right now in Wisconsin, we have an open governor's race, so it'll be very interesting in the Democratic primary how people run, right, and what kind of pressure they're facing. And then it's the first time in 14 years that the state legislature is actually in play and could be controlled by Republicans or Democrats, and how they approach it. We're going to learn right away, because I think the gubernatorial candidates will probably not take really concrete stands this fall, but the Democrats in the legislature begin to roll out an agenda, very beginnings of it, that they can run on to try to take the state assembly and state senate. Will it be a bold agenda in direction of Zora Mandami, or will it be some kind of, we did a couple nice things and we increased funding for public schools by 2.5% or some number no one can wrap their head around? Then we'll know that they're not going the right direction. But really, I think Democratic leaders need to either get with what has to happen now. You need to be bold as Donald Trump and the Republicans are, but for a new America that changes the way things have been. You can't kind of play this kind of windsurfing, standing in the corner playing rope-a-dope, to use a Muhammad Ali kind of metaphor. That's not going to work, because guess what? Rope-a-dope only worked because Muhammad Ali was ready to come out in fury after the entire coming out. And we don't see what happens after rope-a-dope from enough elected.
So, Dr. Craig, you're basically saying lukewarm is not going to get it done. Democrats are going to have to do something, earth shattering, and bring about changes that people are going to be willing to and longing for. You know, we can't anymore accept the kinds of things that are happening. We're headed towards recession. Even a blind person knows that. It's at a time when people are hurting tremendously now. And it also, in my humble opinion, Dr. Craig, this is not going to be a short recession. This is going to be a prolonged and damaging recession. And the damage that is going to be done to people who are already struggling is going to be significant. And there isn't anybody in place right now. I don't see where the Democrats have enough power to be able to, to hold off what we know is coming. Now, Republicans have 3 more years. I mean, considering, 2026 and how that's going to shake out, I'm not so certain that Republicans are going to pay the price for what they've done in this, less than a year in office.
Well, under normal circumstances, it would be a foregone conclusion that the least House of Representatives is changing hands. The second midterm of a president who's not very popular, who's underwater, but they're trying their darndest to gerrymander their way to preventing losing the House. But let's say they're not able to do that, that it's too big a margin to make up, and the Democrats make up for some of it by gerrymandering in California, other places. I think it's a very different situation than the last 2 years of the first Trump administration, in that, yes, the House Democrats were able to block any new Trump legislation, but Trump is operating mostly without legislation and being supported by a Supreme Court that is also a MAGA majority Supreme Court that is twisting a constitution or twisting the legal process when they delay decisions on obviously unconstitutional things to let it keep happening. So, for example, they still are keeping in place, they've not ruled it constitutional, they just found a way not to act on it yet, getting rid of birthright citizenship, right, which is written in black and white, as light as day, in the 14th Amendment. There is no question. There cannot be any question. But they've kept that alive. And so the House Democrats may, if assuming they have power in 2027 after the 26th election, may still have trouble arresting the Trump regime. And then Lord knows how the 2028 election goes down. And if Trump is still healthy, whether he'll even try to stay in power. But it's very dangerous. I think it starts at the state level. That is, we need to start having state level successes that provide the blueprint for what a more progressive democratic leadership and national regime would look like once they can gain power back. And that is how a lot of the progressive era and New Deal reforms happened in the first place. It started in states like Wisconsin that are fighting Bob La Follette. States created models that then were brought to the national level. So I think it's critically important that people try to elect a progressive governor and progressive state legislature in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin, like Minnesota already is, can start being one of the states that's setting a model for what enlightened leadership that actually improves people's lives and recreates the American dream could look like.
So, Dr. Craig, isn't that what Republicans did when they wound up controlling over 30 some odd state houses? It took time, but they understood that. They realized that they got their power base from controlling states.
Yes, and they understood that states have a real important role in our federal system and that state legislatures do in particular. Yes. And there's a structural problem for Democrats in that since state legislatures represent the whole state, there's a slight electoral advantage if you're geographically dispersed. So it actually benefits rural and exurban voters over urban voters. It's a slight natural gerrymander, so that they also benefit from that.
You know, Dr. Craig, for the first time in, I don't know, I can't remember how many years, the legislature in the state of Wisconsin, the possibility that, you know, it might even be, what, 20 years or 16 years?
Technically 2010, because it was a Democratic legislature, but that was the Tea Party revolt. And when the Obama folks didn't put nearly enough money into the recovery, and so we had very high unemployment. So that was a wave election for Republicans. But that was the last time. And then they gerrymandered the state. So ever since then, it's been impossible.
So, and the reason I bring that up is, so here's this opportunity, control over the state Supreme Court, you know, right now, a one vote, you know, majority, I guess, for Democrats can, you know, eventually wind up three, you know, next election. So I guess if we could get a Democratic governor, that can really be some headway in this state. Is it safe to say that?
If there's a Democratic governor that would...
You had to add the caveat.
So I think, and you'll see it in a lot of political, I'm going to give people kind of a life hack for thinking about whether you're being told something by candidates. I'll give you two. One life hack is negate what they said, and what is the negation of it anything someone would ever actually say. So, for example, is I think kids and apple pie are great. I think kids and apple pie are terrible. Okay, they just told you nothing, right? But if they said, I'm going to raise the minimum wage to $20, I'm against raising the wage to $20. Those are two positions that people both take and elected officials both take. So now they've actually said something to you, right? But the other thing is they should promise outcomes, not just talk about programs or funding levels. So when we say, I have a great education budget, I increase general categorical aid by 1.75%, that's not an outcome. No one knows what that means in terms of, did it improve my kid's school, right? Do they have smaller class size? Is the building being maintained now, et cetera? So you need to promise a specific outcome, like we will guarantee health care to this many more people, or it'll be at this cost, or we will. And so that's what Zora Mandami did very well is what people care about is something you're promising me that will improve my life. So I'm going to make sure that every family has affordable health care that is at no cost to them, that they can afford. It's on a sliding scale, but Now you might say, "Wow, my God, how could we guarantee?" Because we in this budget, childcare was cut, and it's already a crisis. People can't work, or they're banked themselves trying to afford childcare, or they have their kids in unsafe situations. State of New Mexico just passed Earl universal health care, a child care that is free to every moderate income and middle class person. And New Mexico is the second poorest state in the union. So these are things, and they're outcomes you can promise. Now, why did that happen? It's because a lot of people organized for it. It wasn't just they didn't just have leaders who happened to decide to do this. Their leaders aren't better. The other thing I'm not saying that is organized people are the key to making effective leaders that are willing to take these risks and do these things.
So Dr. Craig, I have to say that it's one of the reasons why I would use the verbiage politics. Because, you have to be an educated voter. But the worst part about all of it is how is the average American who trusts their elected official supposed to be able to try to read between the lines about whether or not what they're saying is something altogether that I can believe is going to happen? You have to be a not only an educated voter, but you've got to be able to try to discern whether I'm being snookered or not.
I think you remember the character Columbo?
Absolutely.
So Columbo was really, really smart, but played dumb in order to get the killer essentially to give away the goods, right? To make a mistake. So I don't think people should have to be policy experts and be able to ferret things out. I think they should play Columbo, and they said, okay, you said you're going to fund higher education. What does that mean? Does that mean what is going to cost my kid to go to UW-Madison or UW-Milwaukee? In other words, concretely, if they don't tell me what the outcome is that they're giving me, then they haven't told me anything. Everyone is for schools and healthcare and infrastructure, just like they're all for kids and apple pie. That doesn't mean anything. So I think rather than you having to figure it out and be a policy expert, if they don't, and Zorma Dummy was very concrete. There are all these, I'll give you one example. There are all these places in New York, in the various boroughs, very densely populated, diverse, wonderful place, that have no supermarkets whatsoever. It's called food deserts, right? And no one will go there. So he says, where there are no grocery stores, we're going to have public grocery stores. We're going to go and build them. Well, and no one had said that before. No one had thought that America could do that. Well, if the private market won't do it, right? And we could say the same thing with all the big hospitals are leaving the central city like Milwaukee and rural areas. There's no birthing and child centers in the rural areas because the big hospital economics shut them down. Well, then we should build public hospitals. Let me give an example. Hint, hint, that's something that a candidate for governor could run on, right? Where the private sector fails, you do it public sector. We used to do that, right? We used to have a lot of public sector hospitals. You remember Doyne Hospital?
Absolutely.
And the big hospital interests said, we don't really need it anymore, we'll do it. Well, they're not really doing the same thing, are they, Earl? That was a bait and switch. That was part of the whole thing that also took away the industrial jobs. That was a lot of stuff that happened in the 80s and 90s.
Dr. Craig, so Zora Mandani can make the statements that he makes, but he's not a king. He can suggest things. He can't bring them into fruition himself. So, people who are running for office can say a lot of different things, but they need support politically in order to make them a reality.
Right. So he's now facing in the general the Trump forces and the moderate Democrat forces, and Cuomo trying to unite against him. He's still way ahead of the polls. So, because they have a problem that Eric Adams, the disgraced, corrupt current mayor of New York, and also disgraced because of harassment scandals. Andrew Cuomo, former governor, are trying to figure out, compete with each other as who will be the alternative. But you're absolutely right that the only way we get elected officials like this is if we organize, we get involved in groups like the group I lead, Cincinnati, Wisconsin, that do that and put pressure public, because we're all weak individually, we're strong collectively if we organize together. But then you have to actually help win these elections. Then you have to support them. So Zora Mandami, he's been very concrete. So you can be held accountable for what he does, right? So when you're as concrete as I'm going to build public grocery stores where there aren't grocery stores, that's pretty concrete. But you're right, he needs their city council, right? So then he needs to be willing, if they won't do it, to run a campaign with public support to put pressure on recalcitrant city council members who won't vote to fund it. But New York's, a big city with a lot of resources and a lot more authority over its revenue than a Milwaukee, which is a problem in Wisconsin, is there isn't as much home rule. But you're right, the winning the election and electing someone who's promising concrete things that people want, then needs support and organize people in order to get through the various barriers to doing it that are going to, because Donald Trump thinks he has all the power, but most traditionally, a mayor, a governor, a president has not been able to thought they could do things on their own without a legislative branch.
You know, Dr. Craig, so you look at Gavin Newsom in California, and he's saying all the right things, and he's showing intestinal fortitude and courage. And he's talking not just to the people of California, he's talking to the nation about things. He certainly was hamstrung and during the fires and everything else, Republicans and others lambasted him, and Donald Trump certainly said some horrific things about him and others. But the more I listen to Gavin Newsom, the more I'm like, yeah, this is the man. This is a person who has the courage. What he's saying makes all the sense in the world. He's showing leadership and courage. And he's saying things that other Democrats aren't saying. So I know it's 2028, but the things that he is saying, is he showing leadership nationally? Do you see that same thing?
He's a very skilled politician, right? So one way to read him is that's his analysis of the politics. So we should take that seriously as the analysis of politics.
Okay.
Right? Now, where his heart is, whether this is what he would do left to his own devices or whether he's just decided this is the politics, he's a bright politician, I don't know, and we never know. I do know that very few politicians, there are some like a Bernie Sanders that are so clear that they're going to try to do what they want to do regardless, right? I think there's a much larger group of politicians that will do it if the politics is right, but you have to hold them accountable.
Dr. Craig, you are a political science person who studied political science. It's your lifeblood. But the average everyday voter can't see it through that prism. We only see it through what we see and what we hear. And then we have to, we can't spend our lives. You run an organization. It's basically your life. In addressing these things and getting the juice, squeezing the juice out of the orange and making it possible for things to become reality. But the average American, we're stuck. We have to try to believe that what somebody is telling us is real. We're too busy dealing with our everyday lives.
Now, the people who do have the time like a nation to join an organization like ours, we do political education, you learn about this, but I totally agree, not everyone is going to have the time to an inclination to do it. So one way to view the smaller group of people that are organized but actually represent communities or average people is some political scientists have called them prisms of the people. That is just the way a prism reflects light. They reflect in some way and make good, because they put pressure on the system, what the actual popular will is. So for some people, just voting and voting on things that will improve your lives and the better angels of your nature, not based on othering, right? Voting for someone because they hate someone else is generally going to harm you as well, because those people are just trying to exploit you. Okay. So vote for someone who, okay, I have trouble affording healthcare, who actually is concrete and convincing that they're going to make healthcare accessible and affordable for you, and they believe in making healthcare right in this country. But then maybe you have no other time, but there's a smaller group that joins at places like Citizen Action, where we will try to hold them accountable for their promises. So people making the politics by voting that way is part of it. So Gavin Newsom is seeing something real in the public and responding to it, right? Even if he is, and I don't know, he may have, I don't know what he actually believes, but he could just be a transactional politician. But, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was pretty much a transactional politician who did a lot of what he did because of his reading of what the people wanted, right? What they needed. When the great labor leader and civil rights leader, A. Philip Randolph, the president of the Pullman Porters, he came and threatened FDR, basically, that we're going to have a march on Washington. He was talking about marching Washington 40 years before it happened, before MLK gave the great speech and everything. Unless you go after the terrible discrimination against Black Americans, he actually eventually was able to get FDR to desegregate the war industries during World War II. They were segregated, which was a step towards civil rights. But at one point, and Eleanor Roosevelt confirmed this, when he was being pushed further by Randolph, FDR said that, "I'm completely with you. Now I need you to do is to go out and make the politics work." In other words, he said, "You need to create a movement that is so powerful that I can have the politics to actually pull this off." And so that's part, that's the part of all the people who have the time. We need to be involved, as many of us as possible, in making the politics work. The politicians will then come along. It's like, in a way, the way you can talk about leading horses to water. If you have the water, the horses will find the water.
So Dr. Craig, you've been at this for several decades now, and a great historian. If you look at where we are today, this nation, both Democrats and Republicans, and the divide that exists, and everywhere you turn, you see confusion and you see inherent danger, kind of like the robot Robbie The Outer
Lost in space.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, danger. We're at that point, Dr. Craig. And so, my fear is that even people who don't realize that one of the reasons we're in this place is many Americans chose not to even, and more Americans are walking away from this, from politics, from believing that politics are going to change their reality. And yet, it is politics that is changing their reality, right?
I think that's why you need something to give them hope, right? And that is something, it's not enough just to say, you get a certain number of people on just democracy, we need to save democracy. It's the only way to govern, it's the only way to live, but it's also the great creation of this country. But for another group of people, you need to concretely show that democracy, they have a stake in democracy, that democracy matters to them, they can deliver things that they desperately need. So I talked about healthcare is something one can do that on, but housing is another. And there is nothing on the current state agenda, nothing anyone in the legislature is talking about or anyone, say, in city government is talking about that would actually address the housing problem at the scale that it is. There isn't enough housing because there are too many barriers to building it.
Right.
And all that does is it ups the value. It's the advantage of people already own a home because it increases its value, right? But it's terrible for anyone who doesn't own a home or is of moderate or middle income. And that's why the millennials are so having so much trouble getting into housing, right? There are policies you could do, but will someone run on it in a clear way where someone, it isn't just a bunch of gobbledygook with some name for a program, right? That it's concrete and real, and it actually would start to dramatically open up the housing market and make it affordable for a lot more people.
So, Dr. Craig, let me say that on yesterday in Milwaukee, a family of six children, ages 2 to 12 or 11, were found locked in a storage facility because that's where they lived, in a storage facility. And as the parents had to go somewhere, they had no other choice. There was nowhere else for them to go. So they're living out of a storage facility. And from what I'm hearing, that's not the only group of people, but it is because of the problems with housing in this country, and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, so I read a very good book recently by Richard Kahlenberg called Excluded, and particularly for state-level policy. It made a very powerful case, and there are some states and some cities doing this, that exclusionary zoning is one of the major drivers of this. And so if you would eliminate exclusionary zoning, Minneapolis has done so, California and Washington State have taken steps, so has Charlotte, North Carolina, that you would dramatically increase the amount of housing and bring the supply down, right? But the problem is all of these communities that have set themselves up as, we're not gonna have anything multi-unit, right, anything on smaller plots, et cetera, because we all protect our land value. The politics were thought to be impossible, but these places where it's already started to happen or happened, like in Charlotte and Minneapolis, are proof that you can deal with the politics if you're clear enough about it. And of course, the group of people who are left out is becoming so large. I mean, you know that African-Americans in Milwaukee, only 22% own their own home. So the vast majority are the renters, and the renters are like the family you just mentioned. Some of them, they can't afford the rents too darn high, to quote a former third party
in New York. Yeah.
You
know, Dr. Craig, I wish I had more time. Man, I miss having conversations and dialogue with you, talk with a lot of different people, but your perspective is absolutely one that I cherish and love, and I think to keep your voice out in the ether is so critically important. Thank you for taking the time out. I want to stay connected to you if it's at all possible.
Absolutely, I feel the same way about you and your role in media role here in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin. So absolutely.
Dr. Craig, until the next time, we'll make sure we get that together. But this was really great. Have a great, great, week. Tell your brother I said hello. I got to get back with him. And we'll talk soon.
That'd be great. Thanks, Earl.
All right. See you later, Dr. Craig.